It was $274. But I'm not keeping track. So we might return it because you don't know if you like it yet, right? I'm doing a Zen talk like this, man.
Okay. So
you know, you've actually done Zen talks with headaches.
Oh yeah.
You have a headache right now.
No, I'm better. I'm better today.
But you should do a Zen talk like this. It'll help your headache.
Well, I was able to watch the morning show last night because I had that on. Or no, This Is Us. What did we watch last night?
Both.
I had that on.
A lot of screen time.
I'm going to answer. I'm going to elaborate.
First of all, let me open the show.
Well, I already did because you were gone. No,
that's not the way you open it. This is the way you open it. My name's Todd Adams. I'm with Zen Parenting Radio. Oh, it's good. Oh, Rose is dialed in via phone, but isn't
able I'm ahead.
This is Zen Talk number
seven. Can I jump in? Because I'm already there.
This is Zen Talk number 70-something. God, I feel so free with this thing on. You guys can't see
You just want to be a stormtrooper.
I do.
Okay.
All right. So what's your deal?
Anita posted a question on the Facebook page last week, and she basically was having a tough day because her teenagers had come home from school and she was basically just saying, they don't talk to me. They go to their room. I feel pushed away. They don't come down for dinner. They don't care. And she was sad. You know, she was venting, that's what part of the page is for, is so we can support each other and relate and say you're not alone. And I wrote back to her a few things, but I wanted to elaborate a little bit because there's a few things happening in her post that I wanted to make sure that were highlighted. Number one, she's not alone. As I already said, I think a lot of us, when our teenagers or younger kids, it doesn't have to be a teenager. That's one of the most important things is we can have 8-year-olds and 7-year-olds and 12-year-olds that walk in the door in the same way. They walk in and we right away want to connect and we want to talk and we're like in this mood and we're like ready and they're not. And that can feel really sad, especially if we've like cleaned the house or we have food sitting out, or even if we have none of that, we're just ready to connect and they're not. And then what Anita said, I'm taking this from her post, is that when they don't want to connect, she feels very hurt. And she feels very rejected, and she kind of, demonstrates her sadness. Like she kind of goes into, I don't want to say she feels sorry for herself. What's a better way I could say that? It's obvious that she's been hurt.
Yes.
Okay. And she said that because they offend her. And a few things that I said to her is, number one, there is nothing wrong with wanting to connect with your children or with your partner or with anybody else. But we have to remember that relationships are not one way. They're two way. And when we're like, I'm ready, you need to be ready, that's not fair. Because, and again, we may say, but they never want to. But hold on, because we'll get there. We bring our best and remember that love is not for getting something back. As hard as it may seem, it is an act of giving, especially in parenting. Parenting is not a balanced relationship. It was never meant to be. It's not structured that way.
What about when your kids become adults? Is it supposed to be balanced then or no?
Well, I think that as they grow up, the expectation of their maturity level changes certain things where you hope that there's more of a give and take than when they were 8. But you are always still the parent. So to me, even if your children are 40, you are the one who, if something's going wrong, you reach out. If something is, if you haven't talked to them for a while, you call.
You got to make the move.
I really believe that when we enter into parenting, we've decided to go into this relationship. And this relationship is not a inherently balanced relationship. It's just the way it is. So this is why when teen girls say things to me about, and I don't really talk to as many teen girls as I used to about this. But that's not true. I just had a college student say this to me last year. When they say things like, well, I'm so happy to be pregnant, or I'm excited to have a baby because I've just never had anything to love or that loves me. I'm like, ha, because you will have that baby to love, but that baby is not necessarily going to give you back. It might be the most difficult relationship of your life in that it is innately a giving process. I'm saying all that so we don't look at our children and think they should be filling us up. That we look at them and say, I needed something today and you didn't give it to me. I mean, occasionally they do that naturally, and just any kind of connection we have with them, we feel that. But and there are times that we can let them know you hurt my feelings or you offended me. I'm not saying they're in charge. I'm not saying they have a right to be disrespectful. But our children are not where we go to get filled up. And we have to have other avenues. I say that because when we are going to our children to be filled up, or we feel that that's our primary relationship, they feel it. And when we go to them and say, hello, 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 they're like, I don't want you to need me so much.
And don't you think when that happens, most of the time, I can't speak for Anita. I can only speak for me.
I'm coming back. I'm just getting a Kleenex. Keep talking.
I'm doing it unconsciously.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm not yet aware that I need something, even though I do. So I'm saying I want to connect because I want to feel like a good dad. So
because I love you.
Yeah, because I love you and I want to be a good dad. And a lot of the times they feel that. It's funny. Like, when we were having this conversation, I'm about to swear. So if there's any kids around, just ear muff it. There's a part in Swingers where Mikey,
another Vince Vaughn reference,
Mikey and Trent are at the casino and they're wearing their suits, and the statement is, we, and they're trying to talk about getting comped rooms and comped food and meals, which sometimes you do if you gamble, and what they say is, we got to act like we don't need the shit and then we get the shit for free. So what does this have to do with parenting?
It's true.
The more we need, the more it's funny, like the less, I feel like I'm Nick Fain right now. The less that we,
and
help me.
I will. It's the word need that's important, because it's not that we're playing a game with our kids. Like, sometimes these conversations can sound like we're manipulating them, or we're like, because Trent and
Mikey
were really trying to manipulate women, and that's not what we're talking about.
Well, actually, the casino.
We have to find ways to fill up with other methods so we can be present for our children in this relationship that's unbalanced. And then we can have a connection with them where we do feel filled up, and they make us laugh and they say kind things and they say, Mom, can I get this for you? Or it's Mother's Day, here's a gift. And all that will happen. But if we need it, if we're like, my sustenance is your love toward me, they know it. And this is something that I hear from young kids, middle school kids, especially high school, teenagers like crazy. And then the adult women I talk to, who still their parents need them to do certain things and look certain ways. And even if 40-year-old women are like, oh my God, I feel that you need something
right.
from me.
And the more I need my 15-year-old daughter to connect and love, it's quite possible that to the same degree, she'll resist.
Correct.
So the harder you go in, the harder they're going to push back.
So let me demonstrate an example of difference. Our kids walk in the door, and I'll just kind of role play act. Sure. Okay. How was your day? How did the test go? How are your friends doing? Did they like what you did? Blah, blah, blah. And just even my tone, they're like, yes, fine. You know, there's like, I have all these questions and I like want to know, versus my kid walks in and I'm like, hey, maybe don't say anything for a few minutes. And then I walk in and I say, look at what I bought. I got this new vitamin water that I love, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh yeah. And I'm like, do you like this flavor? No. I'm talking like a normal human, like the way I'd interact with a friend or the way I'd interact with my spouse. I act like me in the presence of my children. It's so different than, how are you? What's going on? You know, do you want to do this together? You know, like, and they are like, oh my God. But if I'm just talking to them with a sense of, I have a foundation for myself, because Todd will always say, whenever the girls feel his need, and I'm sure they feel it from me sometimes too, you guys. It's not that I have kind of a practice with them, meaning that I don't feel that they feel my neediness very much, but when I'm anxious or when I do need something, they know. Mm. There's a lot of like, mom, got it. Like, and I take their cues, you know, like I know I'm bringing my shit to the table. Sorry. Swearing again.
You gotta prep them before you start being a potty mom.
Yes.
So there's two things. There's two parts to a conversation, what you say and how you say it. So let's talk about what you say, because a lot of times what we say is, how was your day? Or do you have any homework? Or who'd you sit next to at lunch? Or what are we going to do this weekend or whatever? And as adults, we need to get creative. So sometimes I struggle with one of my kids because I don't really know how to. And I had this really good conversation with her about the Emmy Awards.
I was going to say, you keep saying I have a really hard time. And this is the one you talk to the most. You just are the most different.
Can I finish my
story? Sorry. You're right. I'm sorry.
I was connecting in the old-fashioned way. And it wasn't working.
Correct.
And then I know she loves the Emmy and the SAGs just came out. And we started talking about music. And then we played one song that I liked and then one song that she liked. So then all of a sudden I'm in her world.
Right.
So we need to, so this is the what, this is the content of the conversation. The thing that's going to like shut a kid down faster than anything is talking about boring school stuff. Like the typical parenting questions, how was your test and all that? Like it's boring. They don't want to talk about it.
Well, they're not going to really tell you.
So enter their world. And if you have sons and they game, play the game with them or whatever it is. And as important as it is to get curious and how to connect with these young people, what's more important is how you're saying it. And from what energy are you saying it from? And that's what we started. The first 15 minutes of this talk was about like the energy behind the words. And you need to like become self-aware, or I need to become self-aware. Am I entering this conversation because I need something? Because if that's the case, then you're not going to get anywhere. If I enter the conversation as wanting to give something, then I think I'm much more, I'm in a better position to connect.
Or if just wanting to be human with our kids. So let me explain. So what's going on at dinner time? I don't know Anita's kids. I'm not saying I know what they're thinking, because I would never be so bold to say that, because I don't. But something that could be occurring is if they know mom needs them to act a certain way and be a certain way and say certain things and connect in a certain way, they don't want to be around that. And they don't want to come down and have to act like they're feeling great or act like to appease mom. Do you guys, and again, this could be your own parents or maybe a sister or a friend. Are you ever around people that you feel like you need to appease, where you're like, you're in a conversation and you know you need to say certain things and do certain things and it's exhausting? That's how we can be with our kids, because they know that we need to hear certain things. We need to hear that they're doing well, that they're feeling good, that they feel connected to their friends, that they're not bored. As soon as they say something like, I'm bored in this class. Why? You love math. What? Why are you bored? That doesn't make sense. And they're like, okay, not going to say that anymore.
Well, and after school is the worst time to do this, totally. Because as I've shared on this on the podcast and maybe on the Zen Talks, they just got out of 8 meetings in a row that were about 45 minutes that they didn't really want to be in the meeting. Can you imagine being in 8 meetings in a row that you didn't want to be in? And then you finally get home to this sanctuary, hopefully, that they can kind of drop their shield, let their guard down, be themselves. And then all of a sudden, or just another teacher asking more questions.
And if not asking questions, having expectations. Did you study? Do you have to study tonight? Are you going to go to ballet? Do you have practice tonight? No, you can't miss it. No, the coach doesn't want you to miss it. No, we are not on their team. We are just trying to check through the boxes and the list. And the thing, like, just to give an example, because some people may say, well, then how do I get my kids to do these responsible things? So Skylar, this was just yesterday. That's why I'm using this. So she was, we were having this conversation about something she's interested in, this game where she makes me pick this thing in her game, and I have not picked the thing.
Yeah, it's like there's 9 hidden boxes and you got to pick
one. She lets me pick it.
And there's a gift behind each box.
And I always get the wrong gift. And I'm like, I'm so sorry, I picked the wrong one. She's like, that's okay, mom. It's all right. Like, you know, but I play, right? Along with this game. And then we're walking up the stairs and we're talking about something else. And then we get to a room and I'm like, are those the clothes from yesterday that were supposed to be hung up in the closet? She's like, yeah. And I'm like, So am I going to like bring in another basket? Like I kind of like, we're already in conversation and then I can say, you know, I kind of joke with her about the basket and I say, well, I go, you know, the drill, you know, just close first, then to your show. She's like, I know. So it's like, it's not as if every part of my day is like me and Skylar being best friends. It's just having communication with them where you're not like this with each other. So when I say you need to put away your clothes, I'm not saying put away your clothes. I'm saying, dude, this is your thing. This is what you do. You know to do this. And I'll like, you know, there's like there's a lightness about it rather than a demanding. And this is the big switch for us from our parent, the way we were parented. This is the hardest part, is because we were often parented by authoritarian parents or with authoritarian methods. We really believe somewhere in our body it's more effective. We will say things like, Kathy, I will do this until they really don't do it. Then I'm going back to the old way. And that's fine. Like, I think we all kind of vacillate between all sorts of different versions. I know I do. He does. Like, you don't need to shame yourself for that. But there's an inherent belief system we have that we need to make our children afraid of us, that we need to be mean, and that we need to be demanding and a disciplinarian, and then they'll get something done.
And my baggage is I feel like I always need to be teaching them.
Right.
And it's hard to teach and connect at the same time, because teaching is one-sided. Connection exactly. is two-sided.
Good observation. That's why teaching blows.
That's right.
Because the other person is like, am I part of this conversation? Like, what if instead we're like, you know something, because I'll say to the girls, sometimes the girls will come home, and for those of you who have this other experience where they dump on you about everything, sometimes the girls will come home and just dump on me about everything, and then they'll like start eating their whatever, and I'll be like, you want to know what I did today? Like, kind of as like, okay, there's another person here. And I joke, I'm not, if they were like, no, I'd be like, okay, tell me when you want to hear my good story.
And the other thing is, it reminds me of that, I don't want to talk about the scene in Boyhood, but if you want your kids to talk about their day, talk about your day, but you can't make it boring either.
Well, and you also, I'm not dumping on them. There's this middle, and what I'm going to talk to her about is that I found a cool vitamin water, or that I had coffee with this really interesting person, or I'm not going to be like, oh, and I'm feeling really depressed today. Like, that's not what I'm giving my children. I'm giving them the parts of my day that I think they would be interested in, that I'm interested in. So,
well, the depressed thing I'm with, but I would also invite us, because as parents, I think we always want to share our successes and our celebrations. But I would also, if we want our kids to embrace their failures, and I'm using failures in the best word, like failures are good. That's what gives you the ability to grow, whether it's failing on a test, failing on a basketball game, whatever, like you get to learn from your failures. What I try to do now is like, oh, I actually had a bad day because my customer isn't paying me or something like that, and I'm struggling. Like, I don't want us to like whitewash our day either. You know what I mean?
I do. And I appreciate you bringing that up. But I don't do that. Like, I'll say I got another rejection today.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Point is that I do that organically. So I didn't feel like I needed to explain all the different things that I say, but I tell them the truth about my day. Like, there's a difference between got a flat tire today, or I totally lost it today, or I was teaching today and everyone was falling asleep and I'm going through depression. Those are two different things. What I think sometimes, and you don't do this as much anymore, but is you sometimes will say, I'm going to tell you about a failure I had today. And it's so structured that it doesn't feel organic.
You're asking my brain not to be my brain.
Okay. So we've been talking a lot.
A few things. Why do we, Dawn said, why do we ask so many questions to our kids? I definitely don't do this to my friends. So I like that. Like, approach your daughter, your son, as if they're your friend. How would you have a conversation? It's that simple. And then Nikki says, yeah, we often parent from a to-do list. Often parents do this from a to-do list, should, rather than seeing them and connecting.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, is our kids end up being, and again, this is for Mary Jo, who's got a little one, she can relate to this, you know, very much, is that, you know, especially when they're little, we kind of treat them like work, you know, nap them, feed them, okay, get them in this class, do this thing. And we're kind of like just, you know, putting them in places, time to sit and eat, put your bib on. And then as they get older, we forget that the checklist is no longer as necessary. There are pieces that we can get really invested in, like I'm structuring my child's life. And if I didn't structure my child's life, my child would fall apart. That's not really true. That, I mean, they may not do certain things that you're making them do, like go to piano and stuff. But maybe they would then have a shot at doing some things that are really interesting to them if we weren't like structuring their lives in such a way. And this is an art, because when they're really little, they need it. You know, a big part of, you know, do you guys remember what was the eat, sleep? It was like there were letters. And it would be eat, sleep, play.
Eat, activity, sleep.
We're
talking about when our kids were like babies?
Yes. And then we needed that. And then when they're like three or four, we have to make sure they get a nap during the day. And we are. But as they get older, we have to back up and see, give some space to what they need. Now, if you have a kid who's moving all the time and you're like, I got to put them in gymnastics or I got to get them in running. Okay, great. You see, you're watching and you see what they need. It's not... Why it's an art is it ebbs and flows and it changes. The one thing that I can guarantee you about life, but especially about being a parent, is as soon as you get it, as soon as you're like, this is what they need, you get a couple months and then it changes.
I'm going to read something Please. That actually Dawn wrote, and I think she got texted or something from Rose. Mm-hmm. Rose is driving. So she said, I had to pull over because it's such a succinct thought. This idea is huge, an unbalanced relationship. When you think about this in terms of differently wired kids, it feels to me, parentheses, acknowledging I have no neurologically typical kids, that this is a great way to describe the gaping hole of typical empathy that does not have to exist. Mm-hmm. The lack of balance is personified because our lack of balance due to the more intense long-term caregiving is huge.
Absolutely.
Help me interpret that. What's she talking about?
Well, I think she's talking about specifically with her kids and how their empathy. So this is the part that I'm focusing on. This is a great way to describe the gaping hole of typical empathy that does not have to exist. So, well, actually I have a question about that because I was thinking.
So does Rose.
So, but she's not on.
Yeah, she is. But I think that she's driving or something.
Okay, good.
Is Rose the 414, Dawn? Do you know?
Because I thought, when I say that does not have to exist, I thought
Rose,
she's
Hey, Rose, are you there?
I am.
How you doing?
I am there.
we like your post, but you got to help me with this. So what's
Yeah, elaborate
quest?
More.
Elaborate.
Okay. Well, first of all, that is such a succinct thought that it's an unbalanced, that parenting is unbalanced. So can I pull a Kathy and do a little backstory?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we had a really, really serious event happen, a traumatic event happened truly for both my son and I at the beginning of the school year. And it was terrible. And we're coming out on the other end with a lot of help and structure. But what it revealed was that, you know, even though we believe that IEPs and individual education programs for plans for those of you that don't have differently wired kids, that these measures help our children have equality and accessibility, that there's still this huge divide socially, especially in the world of autism, where you are misinterpreting social situations all the time, and it can become, I mean, it's really problematic. So there's a lot of dual bullying that's been going on, and I don't use that word lightly. And so my plan then afterwards, after we kind of, I got my feet underneath me, was like, let's try and build compassion with teachers and compassion with other children. So so that's one tangent. I need to pull over. The other piece of it is, you're going to have to help refocus me right now because I just lost my way and I'm pulling over.
Yeah, just pull over and then take a breath because we're not in a hurry.
And as you're getting your breath, so one thing that I'm understanding is that, you know, the individual education plan is meant to kind of level the playing field, mm-hmm. which is wonderful. And I'm so glad for that. And I don't have a differently wired kid, so I'm kind of talking out of my butt here.
But Maddie had one.
Yes.
I helped her with that.
But there's nothing to prop up the emotional stuff, right? Because it's all about getting more time for tests and all that crap. Whereas this is more like there's nothing to kind of balance stuff out because of their differently wiredness. And so that kind of sucks.
Well, and it's interesting because it can be built into the IEP, but that doesn't mean it's happening.
Yes.
Because I work with children who we would build in social emotional things, but the other kids aren't getting it. It's your kid who's getting it. So it doesn't really make sense.
Right. Well, and if you think so, yes, exactly. We built it in. I mean, it's all over our IEP, the emotional component. As a yoga teacher, they're really sick of me in IEP meetings because I make it very, very much about that piece. But what the other piece that's not happening is that the neurotypical kids are not, they don't understand what autism is or what ADD or ADHD. They really don't understand what that is, and neither do their parents if that's not their life. So we found some books and some, and different things, and there's progress. Mm-hmm. But I think that the idea of that's so succinct of it being unbalanced is kind of when you're stressing out, and this might come across as being judgmental, but it's real talk, and I don't know that I have the couth at this exact moment to flower it up. But I would be very happy to have, I think, okay, in theory, I would be very happy to be concerned about taking my son to various sports activities and trying to balance that schedule.
Yes.
That sounds like a dream to me. Like, I would love for my son to be on a sports team and actually want to participate, right? Like, that would make me happy. but I'm having trouble bridging that gap with other parents and my own judgment of that, of the differences of our life. My own lack of acceptance seems to creep up into this piece, even though I'm trying to build compassion because the gap is so wide and our lives are so vastly different. Mm-hmm. It's like comparing someone that can't feed their children and that awful, awful, terrible stress, chronic stress running through their body mm-hmm. with someone that has lots of money. That's how it feels to me. I'm not saying that's true or a great analogy, but that's how it feels.
Mm. Yeah. I think that's 100% makes sense. And I think that your analogy is perfect because it's hard to, the big practice is it's hard to have compassion for somebody. Okay, let me say it this way. If they are working, whoever the they is, are working really hard to understand you, it is easier to have compassion for them. But when they are thinking their experience is exactly the same as yours, you feel very unseen because it is not the same. You know, it's not this is not apples to apples. And apples to oranges doesn't mean you need to feel sorry for me. Nobody wants that.
Right.
It's, do you understand how different this is?
Well, and here's my answer. I don't. And it is tricky.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I don't want to feel sorry for anybody.
No,
on
don't
Team
feel sorry.
Zen, but at the same time, I don't know what it's like, our kids, when, get them out the door is probably a little bit easier than the struggles that you guys have to do to get them out the door. And that's like one teeny example. It's hard for me to empathize with it because I don't have to live with it.
Well, but you can the empathy comes from, are you willing to ask? It's kind of like, I love your micro community. Like, are you willing to ask the question? You know, we could learn just as much from that micro community as they are learning from each other. Mm-hmm. The reason I love this work or this conversation, it doesn't even have to be your work, meaning you get paid, is you get to hear everybody's story. And the understanding of someone else is not about being a good person and being their good friend. It develops my empathy and my depth. This is what, I'll just use Debbie Reber because she wrote such a good book. This is what it means to be an ally, is allies aren't, oh, I feel bad for you. Allies are, I'm right there beside you. That isn't fair. I see that. Yeah, my kid doesn't go through that, but I see what you're going through and therefore I stand with you. This is connection. This is race relations. This is the same as, you know, feminist men with women. Mm-hmm. Like, we need people to see what we're going through. And when we feel seen, this, you know, Rose, it's the same, you know, even though I don't want to make, like, I'm not trying to say it's the same, meaning I don't see it. I just mean, when people say, what does everyone want to be seen, heard, and understood? In your experience as a mom with, you know, kids who are not neurotypical, you want people to understand your day. Mm-hmm. Do you understand the energy I'm putting into every day? And that compassion for me looks very different than compassion for you, mom, who is getting your kids out the door very easily. And instead of being lumped together, or that instead of being seen as somebody who is, I don't know that this is the case, Rose, but does the school push back on you like you're difficult? Because that's like, do they call you difficult or respond like you're difficult?
Well, first of all, no, I don't, I think this is a sweeping generalization that I'm going to say, but it's true.
Okay.
I think any parent that's involved in doing IEPs or 504s is a mama lion or a dad lion, whatever that, you know, like, because you're pushing for, it has to do with money. You know, like that all equates to money. So you like learn how to advocate. So I don't know if they really think I'm a pain in the neck, but I think that because of the events that happened at the beginning of school, it showed I am like the human representative to them. And so is my son, of the idea that there were a lot more cracks in their beautiful, perfect school than they could have ever anticipated.
Fantastic.
So, you know, but you brought up something like, I wasn't even really thinking about myself in terms of my experience about the compassion. I actually didn't think about it from that perspective, nor have I presented it in that way of like, do you know what my life is like? I've been trying to present it of the picture of like, okay, so, you know, we had the situation and my son socked your kid in the mouth, and I understand why you're really upset that that happened. And it's a tenuous relationship, just as an example, which happens 3 times a week,
mm-hmm.
legit, you know? And so it's like, and I'm like, so I am not excusing violence or your child not feeling safe. That's not okay. Here's the structure we're trying to put into place so this doesn't occur again. However, I would like you to understand that my son has autism. Like, they don't know that.
Yeah.
You can't, administrators and teachers can't tell that piece of information. So here, there's another parent in the principal's office and they're hot under the collar, which they should be. And I'm saying, okay, so my son has autism. So I'd like to try and talk to you about what it's like for him to be on the playground. So when things are flying, he feels like they're flying at him.
Yes.
That feels unexpected. Everyone's actions are not what he thinks that they should be. When they're teasing or playing tag, he thinks he's being attacked. So it doesn't mean that it's okay to hit someone. We're really working on it. I would so appreciate it if you could, you know, but they're like, that you could talk to your child so that maybe they understand. I don't know, you know, like, that's the piece it's really hard.
Yeah, and I get it. Now I totally understand your comment about unbalanced, because what's unbalanced about the empathy is they don't even understand how your son experiences the world. So there's a lot of frustration or anger because of their viewpoint of how things should go and what is what we call right and wrong. And he doesn't live within those parameters because he has a totally different experience of the world. And so they're like, but we're going to keep living within our parameters and he better abide by those. And he doesn't have the ability to do that. So he is left out as the person who is the problem child, when really, if things were set up in a certain way and he was understood, he could function, relatively speaking, pretty well. And that is, in a public school system, that is, like you said, the parents who are doing the IEPs and everything are fighting that battle. Like one of my girlfriends, Amy, who I've talked about before, she's actually been on the show. Her daughter has Williams syndrome, diagnosed with Williams syndrome. Mm-hmm. And what Amy does is she goes, every time her daughter starts in a new classroom, even at the high school, she goes in and teaches the whole class about what Williams is. And so she shows a video of Emerson. She shows a 60 Minutes video about what Williams syndrome is, how she will respond, why she does the things that she does. And she's done that since Emerson was in kindergarten. And in high school, she did it like for, she's at a small high school, so this may not work in a big high school setting, but she did it first with the social worker, and then they brought that to classrooms and said, this is a girl who's going to be in your class. This is who she is. This is what. And so I'm not saying now everything's smooth sailing for Emerson, but to your point, at least the kids know this is why yeah. he covers her ears and flaps. It's because it's too stimulating. So.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, and I mean, I think there's this really goofy line too of like how much, you know, like what do you share? Because it's, Because my son is, so Arlo is double exceptional. So he's brilliant. I mean, literally brilliant. But he's also really not very functional in a typical yeah. classroom, right? Like on so many levels. But but he's super verbal. And so we've talked about it. And so now it's kind of like a script. And he's working to make it his own, but it's like he then presents. My idea is for him to present that information in the classroom, you know, to be, so my name is, and then he has the ability to share, but he's in second grade. So we're not quite there, I don't think, but I don't know. Yeah. I think it's beautiful, but I also think what your friend Amy is doing, it's just like, when are you supposed to fit it all in?
Well, and Rose, it doesn't mean you need to do what Amy's doing. Please don't think that.
Like, yeah, I hear you.
No, like, I'm not giving, this is what you should do. It's more like that is a version where you could ask, yeah. I mean, he's in second grade, you could collaborate. And again, you're going to, you know, this is another thing to do, but with the teacher, for her to help everybody understand, like, this shouldn't be a one-day discussion. Like, just like social-emotional, this should be weaved through the classroom. You know, we respond, this is yes. good for us, but let's also be thoughtful of Arlo. This might be, and again, I'm making this up. I don't know that noise is a thing for him. But let's also be thoughtful and do more quiet clapping. Like, we can incorporate something in rather than say, oh, you know, like, this is what inclusion, and I'm talking with children, I'm talking with women, I'm talking with races, means is we center, you guys know what it means to center somebody or a group, and we say, what are their primary needs and how are those not being met? We meet those needs and then we come out to the masses. That's how we make sure everybody is included. And again, I will say, not only you being busy, you know, Rose is a mama who's so busy, the teacher's busy, you know, the mm-hmm. principal's busy, like there's no villain in this story, but this is yeah. the work that you are doing and that a lot of other people on Team Zen and hopefully we're doing too, is that how do you start this conversation? So instead of Arlo having to constantly explain himself, it's something the kids are being discussed in the classroom all the time. And you're not trying to, it's not, like, how can, you know, because to your point about him being twice exceptional, like, two things can exist at once. He can be extraordinary intellectually and creatively and have some struggles with some social, emotional, or just social interaction. And he's like, that experience, even though it can be very challenging and is different in your home than it looks for other people, we can all look at that example and say, certain parts of my life that are easy that I excel at, and there are certain parts of my life that I struggle with. It's the dichotomy is no different for any human, and so he can be both things at once, like we all can. But again, I know it sounds like I'm talking about a nirvana, like, you know, I wish we were all there, but it is a place to hold in your heart is that this conversation, including, you know, like helping, educating people, if it be with the help of the teacher or the social worker, instead of working with him in isolation, everybody needs to be at least understand, if not on board, with not only his challenges, but every kid's challenges.
So there's an interesting exchange going on the chat between Aaron and Gail and Nikki and a few of the others. And I just wanted to give Gail, I just want to invite her to share whatever it is that she's getting out of this conversation. Gail, are you there?
I am here.
Hi.
Hi, guys. So, I hope I'm catching everything here. This is a really relevant subject to me. My daughter, I have twin daughters that are 14. And so we're freshman year. And one of them is, I'd say she's double exceptional, probably to a different degree than, I think, is it Rose?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. Rose's son. Cause all these kids are different. And, but emotionally, she has a lot of problems. Intellectually, and her curiosity, and she's just in some areas very gifted. So there's a big tension. And I think all of us with kids like this, that internal tension, like we don't even know what's going on inside of them. Good the point. Disconnect between what they maybe have a harder time doing and what they so desperately need to do and are capable of. So that's a huge, long special education topic that I could go on and on about. But anyway, but it's rough because you talk to the school and they, in earnest, they want to help our kids, but sometimes they don't even know. Mm-hmm. In a case like my daughter, somebody said in the chat here, like you don't, in the case of the Williams syndrome, that worked well for that child and that family and that mom, hopefully. I'm sure it wasn't easy. But some of our kids, like my daughter, they don't want anybody to know that she comes home and loses it and, you know, has tried to scratch my eyes out because she can't take whatever happened at school. And then you get to the high school level, fast forward for probably some that are on here, and they're supposed to be advocating for themselves. And the talk is, oh, in 4 years, you know, theoretically, these kids are going to go away to college. And my kid is coming home saying, I can't do that. I'm not talking to her. I hate you so much. You can't make me. And how do you find, how much do you tell? How much do you want the friends to know? And yet be able to understand, like, I don't have the answer clearly because otherwise I would tell everybody what the answer is. But so I go back and forth from really taking a back, just sitting back and encouraging her. Well, here's who you have to go see. Okay. So you're allowed time and a half on your final exams. But you need to go see your, like they make them go through some extra steps. And for kids like this, they're like, well, I'm already overwhelmed. Now I have to go see who?
Yeah.
And then like Abby's got attention deficit. She forgets. She comes home and says, and she's not sleeping because she's, you know, perfectionist. So she's staying up late at night. And this, you know, there's like, oh, I got 5 hours of sleep. And she says, Mom, I can't focus. I can't focus. And she's banging her hand against her head. And I said, I can't, nobody can focus on 5 hours of sleep. You need to sleep. I don't care what your grades are. Anyway, she'll come home and say, I know I was supposed to go talk to Miss Colleton, but I just keep forgetting. And I said, well, sure. So, and I've been through the elementary stuff, and full disclosure, I'm a special ed teacher in training. So I have my master's degree in that. So I've advocated for all sorts of kiddos. And this stuff is really tough because you don't know how much to disclose and to make things potentially worse for you and your family or your child or embarrass them. I have one who's probably at the extreme end of, I don't want anybody to know. Mm-hmm. I have a twin sister who doesn't have these issues. So don't you dare tell anybody. Mm. Yet I need my needs met. So I'm like, okay, well, how do I not tell anybody when you need your needs met? So,
yeah.
So I do once in a while, I let loose and I get in there and I say, okay, guys, we need to have a meeting because Abby is losing it. And they have no idea.
Yes.
They don't know.
Yes.
But, and then at the other, just the social end of it, you see minor, you see friendships lost or fall away, or you think, I know what's going on there, but you don't want your friends to know that you're struggling. So I don't know what to do about that. Anyway, a little different than the original conversation here because of all of our kids are different, but I feel you.
And I think you're right on target. And I love the, you know, that example of how different it is for a child who maybe doesn't mind or is not cognizant of the fact that the school is working for them, and the child who is connected emotionally and socially enough that they're terrified that people will find out that they struggle, and finding that balance with the school. And, you know, I always feel like this isn't an answer at all, because I don't, like you, Gail, I don't really have any final answers about it, but I've always felt like if there's one person at the school who gets me or gets the kid or whoever it may be, that is like a starting place. And sometimes they leave and sometimes they get busy. It's not like we can constantly count on that person, but we really do need an advocate within the school. I also think that, you know, to your point about your girls and in their school situation is, you know, the expectations that are put on them. These are where, and again, I know we don't have time to go into specifics about your girls' IEPs or if they even have them, but some of the reasons for the IEPs are to cut those things, like to have shortcuts for them, not because they're not capable beings, but because of, you know, this is a challenge. So they shouldn't have to take step 1, 2, 3, and 4. They should only have to take step 1 and 2. And I may even be part of the process. Again, there's no answer to that. But I also feel like the other thing, Gail, and you, you know, I know we've talked about this before, is that maybe inside of the school system, they can't talk about all of these things with certain friends or in the classroom or with their teachers, but can they talk openly at home or in therapy or in a, you know, group of kids who have similar issues? Like, do they have an outlet to talk about it? Because it's one thing to say, you know, it's a little bit like, what's it called, when we like shift our personas in different places. It's okay to do that, meaning we can go into certain scenarios and not give our whole selves, but there has to be a place where we can give our whole selves. And Gail, maybe you're the one who's getting all that right now. Like, you're the place where they dump and they know you know them really well. But that's always the goal, is the hope is, you know, for some kids, they have a camp in the summer that they're like, okay, there's a lot of kids like me in this camp, you know, who we share similar things. We talk about similar things, or have a therapist, or, you know, that's my only, like, I don't really have any advice except to say for the kids who struggle and who really don't want to talk about it at school, the hope is that they can have an outlet elsewhere.
I agree. Yeah. Make them feel like I'm not the only one.
Right. That's it.
Because they think that I'm the only one who has this.
Right.
So I want to move over to, we started a little late, so I'm willing to go a few extra minutes just because I think that just the energy of this conversation is a little bit more inspired. So I think it's worth kind of pushing it a little bit. So I'm going to move over to Dawn. Dawn, would you kind of talk to what you just put up on the chat? Your mic's not on. Oh, she's typing. No, not yet. Try to unplug your headphones and try it.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, this whole topic is really interesting to me because... So what I wrote, for not everyone that can see the chat, I would like to revisit the topic of why it isn't socially acceptable to talk about who we are. So much is expected to be hidden. We are okay with kids disclosing their sexuality, but not other identities. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, I sort of feel like this whole differently wired thing, learning differences, is almost like the next frontier of being closeted. You know, like, it's just who we are. It's how we're And yet it's not okay for parents to get help or seek help or label it or talk about it, or I don't know. And it's something, labels is something that we've been talking about in the micro community a lot lately. And I think one of the reasons why we are so drawn to Team Zen and Debbie is that it's not a label in the sense of how most people use the term label to us. It's like, you've got red hair, you've got blue eyes. It's just a description of who you are. And the way that mindfulness and conscious parenting approaches that is acceptance and understanding and not shaming and not trying to fix that sort of thing, and being more willing. Kathy, the way you described the school system, how like that needs to be the environment that changes, I was like, amen. I don't know. And it's just something that I think we're just up against society with this, and how it's just not accept. I hope it will be one day, but we're just not in a place right now where it is okay. Until it's okay for parents to talk about this stuff with each other, we're going to keep passing that on to our kids. And our kids aren't ever going to feel safe to disclose who they are until we feel comfortable with it and we truly accept who they are and we talk openly about it. I don't know. And then the whole thing with privacy, I don't know. It's just thoughts. I don't really have, like, this is the right way or the wrong way. These are just things that are swirling in my head. And I think it's all fascinating and interesting. And I love that we're talking about it. So that's all.
Yeah, me too. Like, I agree with you. Like, there are certain things that we have grown up with that we don't talk about. We got that from our parents. Our parents got that from their parents. And it's not always about a child's, you know, diagnosis or label. It's just about secrets. You keep this within the family. It's something that my mom has said to me in the past couple of years, like something will come up and she'll be like, well, we'll just keep that in the family. I'll be like, why? Like, but that's an old thought process that still lives in us. And then the other piece is what we're working against is normal childhood development, which is they want to belong. And a big part of development is being like everybody else. Very normal. That's why all the kids want the same jeans and the same shoes, because that's a part of typical development. So to say I'm different in the midst of that can be difficult. Now, some kids like to be different in the midst of that. Like, we need more role models like Greta, you know, who has Asperger's and who's like, I see this as working for me. And so do I. It's working for her because she doesn't get offended like we all do. And she doesn't feel intimidated like we all do. You know, I have a niece who is diagnosed with Turner syndrome. We found out in fifth grade. And there's just a piece of her that doesn't get offended by things. She just doesn't, like, you can say, oh, she doesn't pick up on social cues and look at it negatively. Or you could be like, she can be anywhere. And she doesn't get, it's like a beautiful gift. Like, she's so easy to be around. Mm-hmm. So I think the other thing we're working against on is something being a deficit and something being a superpower. Like, you know, the whole DSM-4 or DSM-5 now is written as these are disorders. And sure, they're different than the norm, but are they disorders? You know, like, can we see that maybe if the situation, we have a child, I was at the library today and there was a mom trying to get her daughter to do something in an activity, and her daughter was screaming and crying and having a hard time, as kids do. And her mom kept trying to get her in there and trying to get her in there. And I always think to myself, that little girl she could probably do fine in a different environment, but this isn't the right environment. Now, I don't know this mom. I'm not judging her parenting. It's just, we are given this like cookie cutter thing we have to fit into. And our kids who don't think the same way or experience things the same way, they're like, I don't fit there. So we need like wider. And again, that I don't like Dawn. I'm not like, so let's do A, B, and C. I don't know. I just see it like you do, John. Like, there's so many different things. And what that can do, though, this conversation that all of you have added to, is really, it comes down to acceptance of that this isn't like something I need to hide. And this conversation is really important. And, you know, and it starts with us. Like I, you know, we talk about things. I struggle with anxiety. There's, you know, addiction in our family. There are times that I, you know, like ourselves and other, it's just not something we need to be embarrassed by. Instead, it becomes part of what defines us. Go ahead, Dawn.
I just have a thought to add that. You're so spot on. And just thinking about labels and the DSM, something that I learned from the autistic community, I really try to stay in touch with adult autistic communities. So there are adult autistics who lead the communities. And a lot of the things, these are coming out in TED Talks now, is they're talking about, we're not disabled because we're autistic. We're disabled because of the environment we're right. forced to be in. And I feel like that's what you're saying is, the criteria in the reason the criteria are in the DSM-5 is because the environment is set up for the majority, which are neurotypical. And when you're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole, you're going to get a disorder. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with the person. It means they don't fit into the system that was designed not for those people. So, and when you're, but then it's up to you how you look at that. You either look at that and you accept it and you say, okay, let's just change the environment as best we can. Or you look at it and you're like, dang it, I got a dud for a kid. And I mean, that sounds really like harsh, but that is how you kind of end up on one side or somewhere along that spectrum. And I love how we're on this side and we're like, no, we're accepting it. We're trying to change it. So I just wanted to add to that, that this group in the last few months has completely changed. And the autistic-led communities has really helped me understand why disability exists.
Yes.
And it's amazing how you start looking at everything so differently.
Well, and that is, you know, that is the, you know, we say this all the time, but Marianne Williamson, before she ran for president, used to say, you know, the definition of a miracle, this is from the Course in Miracles, is that when you change your mind and your perspective changes about something, everything changes. That's the miracle. The miracle isn't the school system magically changes or a magic fairy gives us money. I see this differently. Now everything changes. It's a miracle. Now this isn't a burden. Now that, and again, that in itself is a practice, but you have experienced, Dawn, the difference in the way you feel when you look at this through a new lens and you're like, wow.
Wayne Dyer has a book, rest in peace, Wayne. When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change, which I think is kind of what you're talking about. So I have one other share, and then I quickly want to go to Gail and Aaron, and then we'll be done just because we'll go on forever. Because Gail had some things to text, and then Aaron did too. My one thing is, a lot of you guys are coming to the conference. I kind of feel like we can create a space in the conference. Maybe it's during lunchtime, and we would have to ask Debbie, but maybe just have like a room where 12
you can ask Debbie questions.
12 of these women can kind of get in the same room and just like collaborate, connect. You know, instead of through this computer, you know, maybe
yeah,
we can
I'm
do
down.
That.
Let's do it.
All right, maybe we can do that. All right, so I'm going to go to Gail first. Gail, are you there?
I am.
I know you had a few posts there. What were your thoughts?
Well, let's see. One thing is, Dawn. I think Dawn said something about society not understanding. I can't remember. I'm sorry exactly what you said. But, you know, that takes us teaching our kids like anything. And so my daughter, who has all these emotional issues, will come home and say, Mom. And I used to tutor out of the house, and my kids were, they knew, you know, you don't bother me. These kids need me at this time. Why? Oh, they've got, you know, some different challenges and whatever. So just go in the basement, whatever. So they know. And she'd still come home and say, oh, Mom, there's this girl in choir and she's next to me. And she's because choir's something my kid's really good at. And boy, she can't even, she's so loud and she doesn't realize. And I said, hold up. Do you think she would be singing louder than the rest of the group if she could really hear herself and she knew? I assume your choir director is helping everybody blend. And she just looked at me. So there's so many thousands of those moments that I say, well, hang on a second. Maybe you should think about there's maybe something going on in that person's life and don't judge it. And
Perspective taking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, absolutely.
And it's tedious, but that's how we raise human beings who see other people beyond what we think is on the surface. Anyway, I don't know what else I was saying, but.
Well, just so for anybody who's listening to the Zen Talk after the fact, I saved the chats and I put them in the show notes, and there's some gold in here. So I just want to invite anybody who's really interested in this discussion. There's a lot of back and forth.
Yeah, sorry. I think one more thing I said just for everybody else is what Kathy said about the DSM. And on one hand, that's important for insurance reasons. Mm-hmm. And for understanding, you want to kind of put things in boxes. Then on the other hand, though, I think there's a lot of discussion of late how useful those labels and those boxes are when you're actually trying to help someone integrate and function and assimilate and live with who they are. And everything you guys just said about when you change the way you see things, the things you see change.
Yep.
I'm seeing that recently in my life where I wouldn't have believed that before, but when you start to change the energy around yourself and how you see whatever it is, predicament that you're in, how the thing actually changes. Anyway, so that really hit home. So I don't know the answer about, like, I'm not saying do away with the DSM, but I just, labels don't always help.
Yeah. Needs to evolve.
And before we go over to Aaron, this is all an inside job. You know, if we're waiting for the outside world or the school or our kids or our community to change, we're probably going to be waiting forever. It doesn't mean that you just throw your hands up in the air and never try, but most, if not all, of this work is on the inside. And if we can just, look at this through a different lens, and I'm kind of talking out of my ass here because I don't know what it's like to have a differently wired child, but we all have certain challenges. And if I'm waiting for, you know, my tenant to start paying me rent in order for me to be happy, then I might be waiting
a long
time.
Well, but it takes both. Because to Rose's point, there is advocacy that needs to occur within the acceptance. This is why nothing is simple and nothing is black and white, and it's not a good, bad, and it's, you know, just to Gail's point, like the DSM. It's not, the DSM is not bad, but when we use it in a certain way, it takes us down rather than brings us up. So can we view it as a tool rather than an absolute? And these are, and so, you know, to Todd's point, yeah, it's an inside job. That's the beginning. That's the foundation. That's the root chakra, right? You have to start with, how do I look at this? And then you do realize as you go out in the world, oh, wait, maybe I need to educate here. Mm-hmm. You know, like Aaron, maybe Aaron's going to talk about this, but she sends information to people she loves so they understand that she can't just say, it's all about me. It's an inside job. She has to educate.
So, yeah, I guess that, just to qualify my thoughts about it, is that it's an inside job. And then once you kind of, and this is a word that easily can be misinterpreted, but once you surrender to it from that place, that's when action happens.
Exactly.
And I did an 8-hour course with Michael Singer, and that's basically all it was. But it was really impactful to me. Like, surrender is a wonderful thing. And once you are, and if you can interpret that word in the best way, you do surrender to what is. This is Byron Katie, the isness of the situation. And then from that isness, then you go do your
then
work.
You, go do the
you
work.
Know what I mean?
I do. Beautiful.
All right. Aaron. So Aaron is up.
Okay. So that you summed up perfectly, surrendering. And I think, like, I've recently surrendered to it and have been really grieving what I thought would be.
Yes.
And also, I'm having trouble with the notion of, like, okay, I've accepted it. People, you need to.
Right.
You know, and I can't force them to. And so the only way I can do it is by trying to educate. And I've been working really hard about being open and honest with them about everything, because it's only going to be beneficial for us, for our son, and our family. You know, it's, I can't control if they will read what I send them or listen to what I send them. But if I keep sending, then, you know, maybe they'll get a clue, or, you know, they'll, when they do read, they say, oh, wow, yeah, that really made sense. And, you know, the shoulds and the typical of typical families, you know, Thanksgiving, our boys didn't sit at the table and they were dysregulated. And so we gave them an iPad or a phone and we got looks and we got, and I just, one point just said, people, we are not typical. Like, let it go. This is what's working, you know? Yes. Like, it's not the old days of like, you must sit at the table, you must eat. Like, they're eating, they're calm. I want to eat. I'm going to enjoy myself.
Yes.
So, you know, and it's really hard because especially, you know, we have family members who are very old school. And, you know, you're the parent, you need to punish, you need to, how can you allow that? And really reinforcing, it's not the behavior. They're not choosing to do this. He does not feel good when he does this. And, you know, it's hard. I mean, believe me, this week has been awful, awful, awful. And in the moment, like, I lose my mind, you know, and, but to stop and just look at him for a second and to see he's out of his body and, you know, it's not about the behavior. And so I try to keep like going back to that point and really reiterating it for everybody so that there's an understanding. And the other piece of it is even if they're not saying anything, the looks, the energy, I mean, he picks up on it. Yeah. And, you know, there's so many levels to this, you know, he's adopted, he has challenged it, you know, like there's so many aspects, that I want to make sure he feels the love and knows that, we've got him. And it's really hard to see a lot of times.
Yeah. You know, Erin, I'm totally with you. And it goes back to that. And again, you said this, the old school way of parenting of that shame, fear, and guilt are how we get our kids to account, to do what we want them to do at Thanksgiving or in school or whatever. And that shame, fear, and guilt actually pushes our kids away. Regardless of what their challenges are, it tells them that, like you said, kids feel that shame. You know, they feel when someone isn't approving of them. Right. They can just feel it, just like at the beginning, you know, of our conversation about kids can feel when we need them too much. Kids can feel when we're shame-filled. And, you know, I was going to say for you, because you were just saying, you know, I'm kind of going through the grief of this now, the acceptance and the surrender is, you know, again, stages of grief, I know you know about them very well, and they're not linear ever. They kind of come and go, but you'll kind of find, at least I have, that like I can somewhat manage my grief at home, and then I'll be out in a situation like that. And that's when the anger comes out that is part of my grief, but I want everyone else to get their shit together. Sorry, everybody, because I am working so hard. Support me. If you can't support him, support me. And So you'll find that your grief comes out in weird, leaky places, as I'm sure that you have experienced before. So I know I'm not teaching you anything, but just to empathize or just be right there with you when that happens, you know, it happens.
For sure. And it's a good reminder because then it's like, oh, wow, you know, where'd that come from? And, you know, it's hard, especially lately, to be like, universe, come on.
Right.
Like how much are you going to throw our way? You know, how much do we have to go through? How much are you going to? And then we try to kind of take a step back and say, okay, so what does this mean? And what can we, you know, how can we learn? And, you know, we could kind of go all so many different ways. But then I just come back to, and this is where things are. So you could fight it, or you can try to figure things out. And, it's super hard. It's often super lonely. Like Dawn said, I'm so thankful for this group and the Differently Wired micro community, which 2:00 today, a call just for a reminder to everybody. But to have, you know, people who get it, and it comes back to, you know, when we were going through all of our losses and, you know, like all along, all it is, it's about community. And that's what Team Zen's all about. So thank you, guys. Okay.
And two words that may, because what you're talking about, Erin, is like there's so much happens and you're like, how much more do I need? And the language that always works for me, especially when I'm laying in bed crying, is deeper and wider. I have to keep going deeper and wider. Mm-hmm. Like you think, I've got the lesson. I got it. And there is, and I don't mean lesson like we're being, sure. You know what I mean? Because I don't really think we're being tested. That's not what I think. But when I'm like, no, I've already done this, then my thoughts are always, but deeper and wider. Like yeah, there's like something, that. You know, just, I got to keep expanding. So
So this actually is the longest Zen talk we've had, and I felt like it was the right thing to extend it. I honestly, I don't know if I felt as connected to a group of people on a talk as I do you all. I feel like I just want to listen because I don't have any solutions. So I guess anybody who's listening after the fact who doesn't have the differently wired kids, just pay the respect of listening and understanding and using the new information that we're getting. Like when Gail talked, I don't know if it was Gail or Rose talked about how things fly in the air in classroom and how that would be really fun for me as a kid. And that's terrifying to somebody who's differently wired. Like the only way for me to teach my daughters that what differently wired means in their school settings is for me to understand it first. So I'm really hoping that the team of 100 that we have on Team Zen can take what you guys have all taught us on this call and to understand it, empathize with it. Don't have sympathy, because sympathy is it sucks to be you.
No pity.
Empathy is I'm starting to understand.
And I stand with you.
Stand with you as an ally and teach your kids about that, because our kids in the classroom, that's where a lot of the damage happens, right? And if we can somehow shift that a little bit in our own little ways, you know, the butterfly effect, you know, a little bit goes a long way. So anyways, that's my two cents.
All right.
We'll check on that conference thing with Debbie. Yeah. I mean, no promises, but we'll try.
I think Debbie will do whatever she can. It's just about finding the space and the time, because it's such a tight conference. So if she's there, she loves this kind of conversation.
And she's going to have some half hour on the stage.
She'll have half hour on the stage, but I love for there to be more time for Q&A, but we'll figure something out.
All right. Love you guys.
Love you guys.
Keep trucking.
Thanks for the education. I learned a lot today.
Yes. Have a good Friday. Have a good weekend. Adios.
Bye-bye.
Bye.